Coming up in this week's episode of The Big Idea, we're going to talk about your breathing techniques, the power of meditation, and journaling, as well as always asking why and sharing why you do something. It's bigger than this moment. It's bigger than the classroom. You got to be teaching this to your kids.
Absolutely. Take a breath. Right here. All right, he's coming to you from Bowling Green, Kentucky, where he's got a mobile disco cart that he wanders the classroom and the school with those lights blaring. 7 years teaching math, 3 years challenge day. Seems like he's been tutoring forever. My best friend and a great teacher, T-Free.
And you know, K-Deb's coming from the soggy PNW, our Pacific Northwest, which is a little bit frozen at the moment. Not only has he been in Portland, where he's at currently, but his 11 years also was up in Washington, where he and I met. 20 years of coaching, some of that together. My best bud, K-Dub.
Whoop, whoop. We have to thank you for joining us with Little Things or Big Things Education. We have been brought to you by Peak State Mathematics. We encourage you to please rate and review us. We need those 5 stars. We need that grade inflation in order to get what we need from you. Thank you very much for all of that. We are here today to talk about mindfulness.
Oh, yeah. We love mindfulness. And we are going to talk about a handful of different things today, from breathing to meditating to journaling to, you know, just being aware of why it is we do things. So let's get started. Hopefully, if you have not yet done it, go back, listen to Tuesday. Our connection activity was some meditation and breathing activities. Would encourage you to have that in your own life, but definitely bring it into your classroom and have that vulnerability of like why it's important to you, which helps make that connection in the classroom for why it's important for your students. And there's a whole bunch of science and stuff behind it too, but obviously personal story makes it even more impactful for your students and it connects them to you. So one of the things we are going to talk on is why is breathing important. So we talked about it again, like I said, in the connection activity, but breathing's important because if you don't breathe, that's a problem, right? And most people that are in stressful states stop breathing, right? Like think about moments where you get stressed or you get panicked or you have anxiety or like, you know, the principal calls you even as a teacher to his office to congratulate you, but says, hey, can you meet me in the principal's office? And you stop breathing for a moment. Absolutely. I happened to be literally the other day. I was like, breathe, Tim. So breathing is very important. It helps bring down some of that, that anxiousness. Helps us get back to a calm state. In fact, a lot of us will do this subconsciously through other behaviors and habits. Maybe aren't the most healthy habits for us either, but the reason why we enjoy doing it, among probably some other reasons, is because it actually makes you breathe. And for the first time, possibly all day, it's the first time you took a legit full breath. So those of us that maybe are smoking, or maybe our students who are experimenting with, you know, cigarettes or vape or, you know, these different things, the first time in their life, they might actually be taking this full deep breath of whatever it is they're trying to consume. And it actually calms them down. But so does a deep breath without any of the nicotine or any of the Juul, right?
Yeah, so strange chemicals
that we have no idea what it's going to do to your body. So yeah, so that one. The other one, this is something that I am still totally guilty of. And every Thanksgiving, anybody else have that where you ate so much and you basically just fall asleep on the couch and you're like, I feel so good. I feel so relaxed. But you're like at the same time, like crippled over because you can't move. But your body literally is like working so hard to process all the food you've consumed that you're actually taking deep breaths, like from your diaphragm, getting like legit full breaths. So instead of overeating, be conscious of maybe why you're, you know, throwing food down your system. If it's a comfort thing, or if it's just, you need a deep breath, and just go do intentional breathing. So if you'd like a great activity, check out our Tuesday episode. We show you some 1-4-2 breathing techniques and the turtle breathing. And then the other one that I think is a much healthier way of getting deep breaths in is exercising, right? And obviously, K-Dev and I both are advocates of physical movement and sport and things like that with all of our coaching. So, Dave, why don't you explain a little bit too about the power of breathing and the importance of that? Even we know from like a academic stance, it can help calm us and maybe even set us up for success in the classroom. But how is this also helpful physically and for sport?
Yeah. So thanks for the connection there. I think one thing to just be open and honest with our listeners, right? Like Tim is way ahead of me on using mindfulness in the classroom. And so I've just kind of stuck my toe in the water with this. And it was mostly with my sports connection. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about a specific story with that when we get to story time today. But the thing that kind of pulled me into this framework of thinking of like, how do I help my students, right? Like that's what all of this stuff is about. And my players are my students in that same sense. We were having a problem my first year and a half or so of being a head coach, where when we had like one bad thing happen, it would lead to like multiple mistakes happening in a row. And like, instead of being down 7 or instead of the game being tied now, it was like all of a sudden we're down 21 and it's just like things have gotten out of hand. So I spent some time in the off season really trying to figure out what's going on. I looked at scores around the country over like a 10-year trend from the data that I could find. And it was actually just a nationwide problem where the score differential was getting worse. And so my instinct on that was that kids in this generation don't have as much practice with resiliency because they've been so protected by things in so many different avenues. And so I just didn't know what to do when things didn't go according to plan or when things went off script. And so my next year, what I did was I was like, okay, I did the research. I think the solution here is, particularly in the first half, for those of you who know football strategy, we're going to call a timeout. We're just going to talk to the kids like, hey, it's fine, right? It's not a big deal. Everybody just act normal, right? Things are cool. and so we did that for a year and it helped a little bit, but it wasn't, it didn't have the impact that I wanted it to. So then I did some more research, like what should I actually be doing with these timeouts to like have an impact? And I got some clinic notes in particular from some coaches who work at Linfield College, which is, just south of Portland, a really successful D3 program. And they literally coach their kids on breathing. They do a whole countdown from 10. You know, one is in through the nose, two is out through the mouth, and then just, you know, so on and so forth until you get to zero. And so we taught our kids that and that's what we did during our timeouts. And I'll talk a little bit more in the story time about like an example of that being successful. But teaching our kids that really made a difference with that being able to get recentered. And I like the term that you use. I can't remember if you said it again today, but I know you talked about it in the connection activity of like the idea of like the physiology of our body changing from those breaths, right? You could literally see our kids relax, get focused, and be able to go back to doing the things that they needed to do to be successful.
I love that. And I mean, that translates so directly into the classroom. Like,
for sure.
I've had that happen with my students where they're taking a test and they just, you can see their body shut down because like the stress and the anxiety is starting to set in and they're like, you know, they didn't properly prepare or something happened at home. And so their mind's someplace else, you know, and all these different reasons, maybe why they're closed off in this moment. But the first thing I'll do a lot of times is just check in and say, hey, how you doing? You know, and see if maybe it's just a small thing or if it's something that's like more like needs immediate attention kind of thing. And then the next is usually like, you've got this, take a deep breath and like take it with them. And like you do it a couple times until you see them stop the resistance. Cause the first one's like, oh, whatever. You're just doing it cause you're a teacher, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, you're just stupid. I don't trust it, you know? And then like you said, like by the time you do that third breath, it's like, oh, you're right. I really needed that. And then they're in a different space to take the rest of their test or to re-engage in the activity or the lesson or whatever it is you're working on. So,
Just talking to you about this stuff, one of the things that I'm going to be very mindful or intentional about doing, because I haven't done enough of this in my classroom, but like not just tests, but like being a social studies teacher, right? Like one, there's like difficult content that we have to cover, right? Like I'm a modern world history teacher. We're going to talk about the Holocaust. We're going to talk about the Rwandan genocide. You know, we're going to talk about the way that the slave trade operator. There are a lot of really difficult kind of traumatic experiences that we're talking ourselves through. And I think a lot of teachers' initial instinct is like, you don't want to traumatize the kid or spend too much time on the pain. So you kind of just sideswipe the conversation. And what I've done is I've leaned into those conversations because I think they're important. But I think something that I know, not I think, I know something that I want to do moving forward now is I've had a really hard time with, okay, we've done the hard part. How do we transition out of that? Even if it's just, hey, class is over, like you're leaving my space, but you have to go learn math next, or you have to go learn science next, or whatever the thing is, right? But you have to move on with your day, and giving them something to kind of release that tension, right? They sat with it like I asked them to, and then giving them permission to like release from it and move on. Or then like the other way I was thinking about it, especially in the last few years, it feels like every day it feels like there's something that's happening in current events that we need to talk about as a class, right? Like I would not be doing my job as a social studies teacher if I did not give my students a space to either A, be made aware, or two, to process as a group what we're seeing. You know, I can think of a multitude of examples just from this month, right? Like the insurrection at the Capitol or whatever. And so using that time, right? Okay, current event, we're going to talk about this thing that's happened. I'm going to give everybody some space to process. But then having a specific tool that will help us with A, being ready to do what's next, but also it also seems like it's just a really good transition example, right? Because we know that our kids need to have transitions from activity to activity. You don't just click the next button on the slide and pretend that nothing happened before that. So I'm really excited to basically spend most of the rest of the this particular podcast kind of learning from you some more, because I think this is something that I'm excited about bringing into my classroom and really helping my students benefit from.
Perfect. And I'm eager to share what I know, and I'm still a student obviously as well. And I think you and I honor the growth mindset, and we're always trying to learn. So that's another takeaway hopefully for our listeners is, you know, try to learn something new every day. And if this is something new to you, I encourage you to learn it. So I'm going to actually run with your example from Linfield, because it's beautiful, the counting the breaths. I briefly touched on it in the connection activity, but because it was only a 60-second meditation, there's not a whole lot of time. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing like 3 minutes or 5 minutes, trying to get your students to use that as an anchor is a really good spot, because especially early, if you're doing meditation and you're just trying to let them have a space to be calm and to be still, which is a great skill to have, by the way. And I'm going to talk about it in more depth as to why it's important for me and how it's like literally changed my life. But I couldn't sit still. Like you know me, right? Like
I was going to say, I can testify to that. You do not sit still. Well, no. You do not.
And so the first time I sat still and somebody was like, hey, we're just going to do 2 minutes of meditation. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I sit and I close my eyes and I'm like, when is this going to be over? Am I doing it right? Oh no, I'm not supposed to be thinking. Oh gosh. Okay. Wait, hold on. How do I stop thinking? Can I stop thinking? When is this going to be over? Has it been 60 seconds? Is it 2 minutes yet? Are they being mad at me? Am I doing this wrong? Yeah, like my brain would not stop. And so having an anchor was the first tool that somebody taught me that was very helpful. I remember the first anchor I had was my toes. So when I was sitting and I was still with my eyes closed, I would put my focus on my toes. And anytime I felt my mind wander, I would curl my toes just a little bit to remind myself that I was here. And I was present. And so I would take my mind from whatever it was trying to run to, and I'd be like, oh, toes. Wander, 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 toes, right? And so that was one big tool for me, was just a physical sensation. The second anchor is exactly what they were talking about at Linfield, is I would count breaths. And this is one of the tools from Headspace, and would encourage you all to participate with that, is their Take 10. And they teach you on the in-breath, one, on the out breath, two, and you just count your breaths. When you hit 10, you reset back to one. And so again, when I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, 2 minutes in and I'm like, oh man, what else do I need to do? No. One, two, three. Am I ready for dinner yet? for, you know? And so, you know, it's still going to be a part of it, but it gives me this anchor to go back to. And so when I was still learning how to just be still and notice thoughts and not react to thoughts, I needed that. And so I'm better now about sitting, but my favorites are still guided meditations because I have something to listen to and put my focus on. But the gaps in between the guidedness are a little bit less wandery for me. And it depends on how many times I've done my practice in the week. And, you know, I try to do 10 minutes a day, but, you know, depending on the week and what's going on, I'm not always great at that. So, but I would encourage you all to try to do 10 minutes of meditation and encourage your students to do it. So here's this story I want to share about why it's important. And I share this with my kids, and this is a connection piece. And again, this is how you make this relevant to your students. When I was growing up, I hated reading. Like, I would read whatever assignment I needed to be reading, and it'd be like, you know, Johnny was playing with his dog, and then, you know, my eyeballs would keep moving down, but I wouldn't know what else was in the book because I heard Johnny playing with his dog. Like, oh my gosh, I love my dogs. I want to go play with my dogs. And my eyeballs are going, and I'm like way over here with my brain. And then by the time I get to the bottom of the page, my physical body wants to turn the page, and I'm like, what did Johnny do? I have to go back and reread it. And like, it took me forever to read things because I would have to read it 4 or 5 times because my mind would wander. And now I love reading because I can sit still, or I can put, you know, like non-lyrical music on headphones. I can disappear to a space, and I can actually put attention for an extended period of time into something other than my own crazy chaotic brain and, and all of this madness that still exists. I can actually have moments where I can be centered, so to speak. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love it. It's huge for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. I'm wondering, and I'm assuming you must share that with your students, right? Like the difference that that's made for you, because I can imagine a student hearing that, and or just like me being your friend, right? And having known you through that time and knowing the aversion that you, right? Like your aversion to reading was similar to my aversion to math, and like knowing that there was a trick to kind of help you get your brain squared away so that you could actually process the information is powerful, right? And that's, I think a lot of times people think of meditating or mindfulness as like this kind of like you do it for the sake of doing it, and there's no like tangible reason for it. And it's interesting to hear like a very specific kind of academic like reason to be doing that.
Right. Yeah. And when I share my story that way, like I always start with like, hey, who else here has ever had that experience where you read the page and then like they talk about something and your mind follows that and you have no idea what's happening with your page or read anymore. Right. I always get like 8 students to raise their hand. And so immediately I've got that instant connection. And even the students that are good readers and love their reading are kind of like, okay, tell me more. Where are you going with this? And so I'm like, you know, I have my own mindfulness practice, and I think it's important, and I'm going to encourage you to do it. I'm not going to force you to do it. I'm going to encourage you to do it. We're going to take 60 seconds right now. Just, you know, sit upright, boom, let's do it. Right. And I go through a quick, either just silence 60 seconds or music 60 seconds, or I guide them a little bit, depending on where I'm at and what we need. So sometimes with like testing, I'll do that one a little bit more guided and like remind them that they already have like the answers within. They've already done the preparation. Even if they haven't studied their homework guide, you were here in class and you were answering questions. Think back to those moments where you had the answers. You have them. They are there, you know, and like help prime them with successful self-talk before they get stuck in their own head and spiral. Hey, everybody, we just want to take a quick moment, pop in here, and thank you for joining us on this episode. And we'd also like to extend an invite to all of our free resources you can find on littlebiged.com. And we'd also love to invite you to join our Teacher's Vault, where you can find some of our actual classroom activities. For example, in this week's episode, I talk about the 6 surviving and thriving needs. I have that entire activity with recorded audio for me running through that program, as well as vision boards to help with some goal setting and reflection as well.
Awesome. Can't wait to use those myself.
So So that's meditation. I love it.
Sweet. Yeah.
The other piece I do for mindfulness is reflection and journaling kind of stuff. And this actually, okay. When I was thinking about it this week, it makes me think a lot about your connection piece you do. And I know we had that resource posted, but
yeah, the conversation calendars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like actually one of the ways that I use those pretty consistently. And one of the things I really appreciate for those of you who teach research as a skill, which is something like finding reliable resources in 2021 is like a hard thing for kids to do. They all just want to go to Wikipedia, but which isn't always bad. But anyways,
it's much better than when it first came out with
you. Yeah, for sure. But like we use this thing now called the Big Six for research. And the thing I love about the Big Six is that it always says the sixth step of research is to reflect on your process with the previous five steps. So I use the conversation calendars all the time, like after a research project or after a group project is another really good time to do this, where I ask the kids to write what they're writing to me was like, what was it like working with those people, right? Like what were the dynamics of the group, or where was the stress involved with that versus like, okay, now you work by yourself. How was that experience, or in the research process, what part of that was stressful, right? And I don't usually ask like what was difficult or what was hard, because I can tell that by looking at their work, right? Like I know that you had a hard time finding sources. I'm your teacher. I helped you. Like I know that was difficult. So I ask them to kind of reflect more on like where their stress was at or where their mind was at during that time period. And so that's one of the really good ways to actually use the conversation calendars, is to ask the kids to kind of reflect on where their brains were at as they were going through a particular unit or a particular lesson.
Right. No, I love that. And places I've seen it in math class, and I don't use it very often this way, but the more I thought about it, like this is a great way of having mindfulness and awareness, is like anytime they do like test corrections, mm-hmm. you make them like, what was your first answer? Why did you think that was the correct answer? What was your process to get there? Where was your mistake? What should you have done differently? What's the correct answer? Like if you actually go through that process, like that's a great self-awareness, mindfulness activity yeah. to teach like, okay, what did I do? What can I learn from that? How can I do it better this time? You know? And so that's where I do some just like journaling stuff and just more general notes, but I've also seen it done that way. And those are my, of test retake with corrections that way, that's definitely my favorite way of doing it, because it builds in that reflection mindfulness piece.
Sweet. I like that. Yeah.
So, the last piece that I want to hit on with us on this big idea is the ask why a lot, like a lot, a lot. And if you ask why and they don't have an answer, ask why don't you know, or if you did know, what would it be? Or why do you think you always revert to I don't know? You know, like I literally question everything, because it forces them to not just intake, but it creates that processing. It creates the what's actually happening for me. And the more you ask them why they behave certain ways, the more they can use that to their advantage or figure out where their pitfalls can be. And so like before winter break, we did this personal growth activity where we're looking at the six different surviving and thriving needs of human behavior, and looking at like our primary question. And are we driven by avoiding pain, or are we driven by seeking pleasure? And most of us, it's one or the other is kind of our driving force. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we have this question we ask a lot, which is like, you know, why don't I understand? Or why is this so hard for me? Or why does this always happen to me? Or maybe it's something positive, like what can I learn from this? Or how can I do it better next time? And like your different primary question is going to have massive impacts on how you experience life and how you show up. And so asking students why they're doing things is critically important on their self-development, as well as just understanding in general. And then the other part I do, which shares my vulnerability and creates the connection again with the students, yeah. is I always tell them why I do something.
For right? sure. Yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah. Like, why do I have to take a test? You know, why do I have to do this homework quiz? Why do I have to do Mindful Mondays? Why are you teaching me Financial Fridays? You know, like, why are you doing things that are not inside your curriculum? Like, this personal growth development? Why are we doing goal setting? And so every single time I bring something, whether it's a state standard or it's something additional I think brings tremendous value to my classroom, I always tell them why. And if I don't know why, it gives me a moment to reflect, and then I come back with an answer for them.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. It's I think we talked about this a little bit previously, but one of the interesting things that you're seeing from the coaching world is that as coaches are learning to address a group of kids that have grown up in a different way, right? They've been taught different lessons by their parents at home, is that, man, you better answer the why before they even ask it, right? Because it creates like a sense of like, now they're asking, why do I even have to ask you why, right? Like you should be taking care of this. At the same time, to me, it's, I really appreciate it. And I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this in a way that doesn't come across as judgy and or being wrong, because I could just be misinterpreting things as well. But like, one of the things that I feel like has made a huge difference in your own life, just watching you as a friend since fifth grade, right? And really these last 5 years, is I felt like one of the few things that we really were different about was I've always been kind of a why asker. And I think that's because my dad is like that. Yeah. And I felt like in some ways it was a strength when we partnered together, that you were really good at asking the how and I was always asking the why. And there were times when it was good that you were like, David, stop asking why. We don't have time for that. Like, we legitimately have to take care of the how right now. but I feel like you've gotten much more into being an asking why kind of person. Do you feel like that's an accurate statement for yourself? Or
I would agree. I definitely, like, when I do those different personality trait things to kind of learn more about like where I'm at and where I've shifted in the last 7 years, for sure. Mm-hmm. I definitely am more of a challenge the process. And my initial, and it's still my primary, but challenge the process has definitely shown up as a larger piece of me, is the like inspire a shared vision, right? Like, I am very much of like, where am I going? What are the steps to get there? Hey, everybody, here's how we do it. Let's go. And it's very much that how you were describing. But I've also realized that if people don't know why they're doing it, they won't do it. And so I've started to ask why a whole lot more.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think, so to me, like, that's such a great skill for, without getting into a soapboxy thing, like, to me, like, that's one of the things that scares me about modern society, is that we've become a bunch of ask how versus ask why. And I'm not, again, I don't want to make a political statement, but like, when you're talking about like, how do we make self-driving cars, when the question should be, why would we make self-driving cars? Right. And so, like, I think what you're doing, even though it's not necessarily intended for that political purpose, but to get kids thinking about their own why, is really important to their growth as then being able to participate in society in a way that's beneficial for all of us. So I think that's great that you're really focusing on that with them.
Right. I will add to the why on that. I say we create self-driving cars, so we eliminate the human error aspect, and we hopefully will eliminate as many car deaths as possible. That's my why and excitement behind it. But anyways, there's my random tangent on that one. Perfect. But yeah, why is very important. And actually, I feel like you and I, we had this experience in sports, I think, is like, people would ask like, or would pose to us this idea of like, if somebody asks you to do something and they're not willing to do it themselves, question why. Right? Like, don't just follow blindly, especially if they're not leading by example and doing it themselves. Like, question, like, why is that person not willing to do this thing they want me to do? And so I think questioning why is a good trait.
For sure. And I think that, if you're okay with getting into the story, I think that's actually a good transition point.
Perfect.
Right, you might see into the story. So as Tim has mentioned a couple times in the intro, I do have the 11 years of teaching experience, but I've also been coaching since I was 15. Maybe tell that story some other day. But the story for the mindfulness that I thought of was, again, going back to that idea of teaching the breathing and teaching the why. And so, again, like, talking about like this era of student athletes that we're working with, have to explain the why right off the bat. And to your point, like, have to do the thing, right? Like, can't just say, hey, I want you guys to do these breathing exercises, right? Like, I had to get, and it was hard, and I couldn't quite get, and it was a point of contention for me, and I couldn't get all my coaches even to buy into, like, doing the breathing exercises. Like, hey, stop screaming at the kids and go and take a breath for a second kind of thing. Yes. That I would talk to the coaches about. But so, you know, they were asking, like, why are we doing this, and what's the purpose behind it? And so I made it very clear when we said from day one, hey, here's how, like, I was very clear, like, here's how we're going to use timeouts in the first half. If we feel like the momentum is getting away from us, if it just feels like we used to use the term, I think we got this from Boehner. I don't know if it was when we were coaching with him or when we were playing for him, but like that idea of hold the rope.
Right.
And like, don't let go of the rope. Right. And so like when I felt like we were starting to let go of the rope, I would, okay, now it's time for a timeout. So first I told them, this is when we're going to do this, right? I'm going to call timeout, and I might even do it in the second half, but for sure in the first half, I'm going to call timeout so that we can kind of regather our wits. So like I said, I did that for a year without really having an idea of what the hell to do with that timeout, right? Like, we were just calling timeout and trying to tell the kids it was okay. And I don't want to name any names because this is not necessary. I mean, it's not negative about the kids, but I don't want them to feel like I'm outing them in a way. But like, I remember looking in a couple of our kids' eyes, like I can picture three of their faces right now, where I called timeout and pulled them to the side, like, hey, everything's okay. And you could see both in their faces that like what they wanted to yell at me. And because the three kids I'm thinking of are also really great kids who knew better than to do that in that moment, like what they wanted to say was like, no, they're freaking not okay, coach. Like, and you could tell they had like a list of things that were not okay that they wanted to go through when I told them that they were okay. So there was a lack of belief in me telling them that they were okay.
Right.
So take that to the next year. Number one, being intentional about telling them, hey, this is why we're calling timeouts at this point in the game, right? Because I didn't tell them, I told the coaching staff that we were going to start doing that, but I didn't tell the players. So the next step was, hey, let's talk to the players, and then we're going to teach them this breathing exercise and make sure they understand this is why we're doing that. And then I could see kids coming over, and I learned to say things a little bit differently. I didn't say things are okay. I said, you know, I'd say things are, it's going to be okay. We believe in you. And then everybody stop what you're doing, close your eyes, because in a football game, there's too many stimulus to have your eyes open. And I would just, we called it Linfield breathing. Like, hey, we're going to do our Linfield breathing. And so, you know, and I did it with them, right? Like, I didn't do anything else. I wasn't talking. I wasn't trying to get any coaching points in. I would just say, like, you know, 10, and you hear all the kids, and you have kids kind of coming up from behind us too, and you'd hear the 9, right? And I would just kind of count, and I would do it with them, and you do that, and then you kind of open your eyes, and you could just see the difference in our players' bodies and faces, right? Their facial expressions were just different. Like, that kind of panicked / lack of trust face that they had erased, ready to move on, you know. And sometimes there was enough time with the timeout, you know, you got the official screaming at you, hey, it's time to go, and you give them like the one thing that you need them, where you call the play if you're on offense or whatever. But really the whole timeout was just like, hey, we're going to be okay, let's do our Linfield breathing exercise. And then you could just see the change. And I'm not going to say that like it changed our season and that we went from being 2-7 to 9-0 or anything like that, but you could see us doing a better job of reholding the rope, right? Like, those runs that we were giving up in years past, where you could see the panic set in and just like one mistake made another mistake, and it just became like this exponential growth of the catastrophe, like that, yeah, that flatlined, and we were able to regain a sense of calm and kind of get back on track. Right. And, you know, it's football. There's a million, it's just like life, right? There's a million variables. So you're just as likely to get knocked back off the horse and need to call a timeout in 5 minutes again and go through that. But like, we were at least able to like press pause. Right. It was another term that we used a lot in our coaching staff, was the term like, hey, just press pause. Let's like get ourselves recentered and refocused. And to me, the thing that I will take away with me, and the reason I know the next time I'm in a head coaching position that I'll continue to do that, is I can still visualize just the change in body language or facial expression that resulted from doing that activity.
Right.
And thanks to you, I'm excited to carry that into my classroom and hopefully help my kids in my classroom in the same way. So.
Perfect. No, I love that and appreciate that story. I think it's so good to know that this is a life skill. And for me, and I know this is true for you too, like when we coached football, it wasn't about the sport as much as it was about like creating great humans and like life lessons. Like it was bigger than the game, you know? And so I think this mindfulness is bigger than the classroom. I think it's bigger than the individual lesson. It's bigger than the individual moment. Like it is about like peace and calm and steadiness. And so I don't know. I think it's so important.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it. So I've seen the difference that it can make, and I'm grateful to have you there to kind of inspire and push me to think about other ways to incorporate it both in my own life and with my students. So I'm glad that we got to talk about this today.
Yes. Well, we appreciate you all joining us for our Mindful Week. We love you all, and we will see you next week. Have a great one. Always learn in peak state.
Make it a great day. We'll see you next time.